Ladies and gentlemen, sports fans alike, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago, one of the couple, two, three best podcasts around. So sit back, grab yourself a cold one and a Polish sausage, park your keister in the French room, and listen to Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago.
In Chicago, you know that all sports rock. The Bears, Hawks, Bulls, Cubs, and Sox. Pick your favorite, you can choose, as long as the Packers lose. For everything you need to know, it's Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago. Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago.
Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago. This is your hosts, Alex and Sean. On this episode, you know what we're going to be discussing on this episode. You know what we're going to be discussing. But before we jump into that, I want to thank our sponsor, the Rockford IceHogs. If you're not familiar with the Rockford IceHogs, they're the AHL minor league affiliate of the Chicago Blackhawks. What does that mean for you? You could see the stars of tomorrow today at family-friendly, affordable prices. So make sure you head on over to icehogs.com, get yourself a hat, shirt, jersey, tickets, and more. Tell them Swirsky Sports sent you. You know, I started taking some notes, what I wanted to talk about on the show. And it has gone wildly in different directions, depending on the day and the time. Going into yesterday's game, it was in one direction. The first half of that game, it was a different direction. The second half of that game, another direction. Then when the news broke this morning that Matt Nagy was fired, started to go in one another direction. And then the reports, the early reports started coming out that Ryan Pace was going to be retained. It about faced and went a completely different direction. Then when there was official Ryan Pace, it was going to be a feel good episode. Then George McCaskey opened his big fucking mouth, and here we are.
Sean, Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace are no longer the focus of today. They're gone. They're in the past. It was a topic, a conversation. It was an important moment for the Bears, but the slate that's been wiped clean, everything that felt good about that, everything that gave Bears fans some hope, I'm ashamed of myself. I should have known better. I should have known that George McCaskey was going to run this the same stupid way that he's always been doing, that he went out of his way to basically admit that he's a fan, not a football expert, and yet he is still going to be the guy that is going to be in charge of all of this. That he's not going to hire a president of football ops. He's not going to find anyone that's going to really help modernize the way they do things. They've basically replaced Ernie Accorsi with Bill Polian. I mean, that's basically what this is. And the biggest elephant in the room, Ted Phillips is still involved. And I don't care what he says about Ted Phillips going forward. The fact that he was there, the fact that he is part of this search, just tells you that Ted Phillips is still doing what he's been doing for decades at that place. Nothing changes. Nothing.
Many of you guys may have worked today and not had a chance to hear the press conference for yourself. You may have heard things. You may have just totally not heard anything about it. I really just want to run through the finer points of this press conference. Let's see. He started it off by chastising children. Then he called Olin Krutz a liar. Then he said that he doesn't know anything about football, but he's going to lead the search for the new general manager who will report to him. And there's no need for a president of football operations because it's just one job. Then He said, Ted Phillips, he trusts him. He trusts fully, and he's going to remain with the team. And then the board of directors told him he was doing a good job. And
his mother.
Wait, whoa, no, no. It's even better than that. But let me get to this. So not only did he chastise children, call Olin Kurtz a liar, he also specifically called out players that he didn't think were playing well.
Jalen Johnson.
He called out specific players and he got upset with the media, but he patted himself on the back for what a great job he's done. And he said the board had confidence in what he was doing. Can I just go through who the board is when he's talking about the board? I'm going to read you the board. Number one, the secretary of the board, his mother, the owner of the team. She owns 80% of the team, secretary of the board. Also on the chairman of the board, him. He is the chairman of the board. Ted Phillips is on the board. His brother, Brian McCaskey, is on the board. His other brother, Ed McCaskey, is on the board. His other brother, Patrick McCaskey, is on the board. And then Andrew McKenna, who's a 10% minority owner, is on the board. He's 92 years old. And Pat Ryan is another he's on the board. He's another 10% minority stakeholder in the franchise. He's 84 years old. This board is, everybody is a senior citizen or older. They're all in their 60s through 99. They gave him the thumbs up.
Well, which owner really gave him the thumbs up was probably Aaron Rodgers.
I just can't believe how poor this conversation went. I mean, right from the start, you already knew it was going to be bad because the Zoom call connection was terrible.
It was. That was so funny, dude. At my old job, when we had to work from home, when we did Zoom meetings, they were 10 times better quality than that. That is a billion-dollar franchise cutting in and out with your owner. Sean, you knew this presser was going to be a disaster from when they first signed on and he said, Ted Phillips is on. He's going to be taking your questions. You knew right then and there. Right then and there.
And I want to set the expectations is because, okay, we got the word Ryan Pace, who apparently from what all we hear is George McCaskey loved. He was fired. He was fired. Ryan Pace was fired. Matt Nagy was fired. So we're like, okay, all right. And then we got word that it would just be George McCaskey on the call. And everyone went, all right. We're actually going to get down to business. We're going to have structural change.
Mm-hmm.
And then George started talking and immediately bad Zoom connection. And then he's like, Ted's on the call. And I said, oh no. Everyone was like, all right, here we go.
Listen. Ted Phillips being involved in this process is literally the definition of being involved in football operations. And when George McCaskey tries to say that he's not, come on. And look, you know what? If the scenario was that Ted Phillips was just going to be heading up things with Arlington Heights and the business side, fine. Then if he wasn't involved in football at all, he shouldn't have been on the call today. And they wanted to talk about Arlington Heights today. And listen, I'm 100% for the Arlington Heights thing. Today is not the day for that. Today is all about the team on the field. Today is not about business. Today is not about football. So if Ted Phillips was really on the business side, which fine, okay, he shouldn't have been on the call. The fact that he was on the call and he was mentioned as part of the search committee in the interview process just tells you that that guy is still going to be involved with football operations. I don't care what George McCaskey says.
Yes, he already has proven himself a liar. George McCaskey is a liar. Period. Period. Period.
No, apparently Olin Krutz is the liar.
Olin Krutz.
What a jackass thing to say.
Listen, it could have been a he said, she said thing, which a billion-dollar owner and chairman of the board of a billion-dollar, multi-billion-dollar franchise, charter franchise, shouldn't have got into that. He should have just said, no comment.
Mm-hmm.
Or
said, you know what? There was a miscommunication. We're going to talk to them and work through it. That's all you got to say.
Yes. Misunderstanding. I'll talk to Olin offline.
Right.
And that's it. No, he called him a liar, and Olin wasn't going to let it go. Olin talked to Harry Hiestand, who backed up the story, and talked to Ryan Pace, who backed up the story.
Mm-hmm. I give Olin Krutz a lot of respect for like double checking. Like I give him a lot of respect for that.
I guarantee it was probably a total miscommunication that they thought it was some sort of, he's just like a regular intern and that's the going rate, $15 an hour, not, mm-hmm. This is fucking Olin Krutz. I could see where there's a mix up. Sure. When there's a mix up, you correct the situation.
Or you work to correct it and you ensure that everything is being taken care of. And if there was a miscommunication, you work through it. But to sit there and say, oh, take Olin Krutz with a grain of salt. And then the fact that I can't remember which reporter asked where he said, so you're saying it's not true. You heard that pause and then you heard, then you heard another long pause. That's just how things go sometimes. Like that right there is a man who is just caught in his bull crap. And look, it's one thing. It is one thing for you to go up and spew a bunch of incompetence when it comes to football. But when you are literally saying that kind of stuff about other people, that is just not cool.
It was just ridiculous. And then we know it's going to be the same old bullshit. They just replaced, like was last time, they just replaced Ernie Accorsi with Bill Polian. Mm-hmm. And I get, listen, Bill Polian had a successful run in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what makes his job a lot easier when he did this? Is he had Peyton Manning for how many years?
Yeah.
Peyton Manning makes everything better.
And he's another dinosaur. He's going to be what, 80?
Yeah, he's about to be 80 years old. So your search committee is an 80-year-old guy who said that Lamar Jackson should probably play wide receiver.
Oh, God.
And he doesn't believe in analytics. And this was analytics is another thing I was going to go into more for this episode. And I want to get into that, but you chose an 80-year-old guy that the game has passed him by. And I don't care. You know, he's been an analyst for however many years. He's not in the day-to-day game. That's not the same being a television analyst or having a podcast is not the same as being in the day to day. Cause otherwise people would take my advice on things from, you know, the Bears never call me and ask me for my input mm-hmm. because they're not the same thing.
Right.
And so he's got an 80-year-old man himself, sweaty Teddy, a guy named Soup, and a lady who I don't know who she is. And Lawrence Holmes made me feel bad for not knowing who she is, but that's your search committee for both your general manager and your coach. And you may or may not hire your coach before you hire your general manager.
Hey, but Leslie Frazier might be available to come in as a head coach.
Yeah. So our first official head coaching candidate is Leslie Frazier. Why? Because that's who this fucking team is. A fucking dysfunctional piece of shit.
And listen, I'm all for interviewing as many pieces as possible, as many possible guys, many possible angles as possible. Go interview 30 plus people. Fine. But you know that they're going to be targeting these certain guys that meet their meatball standards, basically, that they're not going to think outside the box. They think they're going to think outside the box, and they're not. They're not going to look at certain analytics and aspects like you mentioned before. They're doing the opposite of what we'd hoped they do, like the Bulls did with AK or the Cubs did with Theo Epstein. Those were both two franchises that were absolute disasters. And the ownership said, you know what? We're going to do everything different. We're going to hire a president of operations, and then we're going to go out and then assure that this is the right guy for the job, embraces a new strategy, and he's going to hire his guys, his GM, and they're going to answer to him, and we are not going to get involved with the operations of the sport itself. We're going to stay on the business side. But no, the Bears decide to keep doing what they're doing. And I love the fact, I loved the way the media just roasted them in this presser. Loved it. The fact that, why don't you think a president of operations would be a good thing? Why don't you think structure would be a good thing? Why do you think that you're still going to roll with you and Ted Phillips making these decisions when you've seen no track record of success whatsoever? And he didn't have an answer for any of it. It was just a bunch of gobbledygook.
Nope. So according to Mark Potash, is George McCaskey, in his tenure of this position after taking over his brother, has now fired three general managers, Jerry Angelo, Phil Emery, Ryan Pace, has overseen the firing of four head coaches, Lovey, Trestman, Fox, Nagy. How many bites of the apple does he deserve? And what's even more is he flippantly answered, it works different. The structure works differently for different teams. And this is how we do things with the Chicago Bears. And this is why you will not ever put together a perennial winning team as long as your shitty family owns the team. Period.
Yeah. And look, here's the thing. When you are looking for new people to hire, and you are constantly looking to other people for advice, it tells you right there that that is someone that doesn't know what he's doing. He is openly showing you he doesn't know what he's doing. I would have really respected George if he came out and said, you know what? I don't really know what I'm doing. Ted and I, we've done a good job on the business side. We've made a lot of money, but in terms of winning football, it's not happening. So we are going to hire the right people to make those decisions for us, as in, you know, a president, a GM. I'm not talking about a search committee. I'm talking about people they're going to hire and help bring more people in. Instead, they're just trying to like poach advice from other people, thinking that they're going to tell, oh, what if I ask this guy from this team, this guy from that team, or this old dinosaur? Yeah, I'll just go out and see what they tell me, and then I'll do whatever based on some old advice they give me. You're not willing to change your structure. You're not willing to admit that you have not overseen a winner in your whole time here. You have one division title since 2010. One, it's 2022. You have one playoff win since 2007. You have three playoff wins since 1996. Three!
And what's crazy is he consulted John Mara about what he should do. And I'm going to summarize. John Mara is the owner of the Giants, who are in a worse position than the Bears.
The only team that's worse than them right now is probably the Giants, yeah.
And I don't know, Jacksonville's real bad too. But John Mara decided not to fire a coach that ran a quarterback sneak on 3rd and 9 from their own 4-yard line.
Yeah. What? And if you thought passing on 4th and 1 three times in one game was bad, that's a real doozy.
I just don't know. So after today, like, I feel like I just can't be that mad at Matt Nagy, because he's just a dingleberry that was like, oh man, they want to pay me how much money? I'll take that job.
Wouldn't you?
I you know, if they hired me, I would go out there and parade out there and do the best I can, no matter how terrible it was. And listen, I would be a terrible head coach because I don't know how to be a head coach.
I don't
and
either.
I would be terrible at it. But if they paid me to do it, I would show up every single day and do my best, even if my best was awful, until they fired me. But you know what? I guess my fault was putting all the blame on him and Matt Ryan Pace, because it was George McCaskey. George McCaskey is the puppeteer here. And then, you know, his mom is just like, I don't know. Have you ever seen Texas Chainsaw Massacre, where they have like the grandpa sitting in the chair and you're not sure if he's alive or not?
Yeah.
And they just keep, and they're trying to get him to hit the girl with the hammer and he can't even hold the hammer. Like, that's literally Virginia McCaskey. So like, I can't even be mad at her. Like, I feel like they just Weekend at Bernie's her hand when they need her to sign something.
I was just going to say Weekend at Bernie's. I was just going
to
say.
So like, I am going to put the sole blame on George McCaskey.
Heck, I kind of feel the way you just described Pace, Nagy, and Virginia. I kind of feel the same way about Ted Phillips. He's put in this position to make these decisions. Like, George McCaskey is the one that is keeping him there.
Like, I'm hearing rumors that Sweaty Teddy is going to retire after next season. No, why would you retire? This is a cushy job. Like, you know, this dumb family's never going to fire you.
No,
you
can work till
whenever you want. You get to oversee the potential building of, you know, this amazing stadium. That
if that actually happens, I don't know. Today's press conference wasn't all that reassuring.
No, like if this press conference made me feel like that there's really not that realistic of a chance they're moving to Arlington Heights, and this is just a ploy to get the city to give them what they want.
Oh, that could be. Could you rule that out? I couldn't.
Because they were just like, well, let's pump the brakes a little bit. When could this happen?
You don't even have sketches together, man.
You didn't even do the surveys of whether it's feasible to build on that land.
Right. Right. They've had this whole thing for months, and they have no sort of outlook on this whatsoever. And I don't know how much work goes into that, but you would think there would at least be something there. And, you know, maybe again, this is another indication that Ted Phillips really should just be on the business side, because if he has to worry about business and football, how are you going to get that done productively? If Ted Phillips is allowed to just focus on this, then maybe you'll actually make some progress there.
I just feel like if you agreed to purchase this land, and how much did they offer for this, that plot of land?
I don't know off the top of my head.
It was
$15.
It was a sizable chunk of money. And today it made it sound like they don't even know the viability of building a stadium there. So why in the world would you offer the money? So maybe Ted Phillips is even a good businessman. Maybe it's just the NFL, the rising tide lifts all boats. Maybe it's just the success of the NFL just carried the Bears to being rich, and Ted Phillips had nothing to do with it. And because this was a disaster, where were your PR people? Like, is there not a PR person on this team that was like, oh yeah, why don't you run through your opening monologue here, George? And the whole, like, and then just go, yeah, I'm going to stop you right here because that is bad.
Hey, George, someone's going to ask you about the Olin Krutz situation. How are you going to respond to that?
I saw somebody tweet that last year's press conference got a 0 out of 1,000, and this press conference was worse.
It was worse. It was worse. I was angrier today than I was last year. And that's really saying something. I mean, at least last year, they didn't personally attack people like they did to Olin Krutz, or as you eloquently put it, chastise kids. You put that completely out of context. It's like, holy crap, what happened?
It was a complete, just a complete disaster. I don't even know how to put it into words. Honestly, I was literally waiting for him to announce with the search party, or the search committee had Hawk Harrelson in it, because he has a strong sense of who has TWTW.
Oh God. seriously. Here's another thing I wanted to bring up too, was as these Chicago media members are hounding, like, they did not call off the dogs. They smelled the sausage and they let them go after it. As they're asking these questions, and you see George continue to fidget around and try to find the right words to say, it really speaks to how he just doesn't get it. He's completely oblivious. And I don't understand how you could continue to be that oblivious. And it begs the question, is he oblivious, or does he really just not care? As long as you are making a fortune, why should you care? I think it's a little bit of both. I really do. I think that he doesn't know what he's doing when it comes to football. He doesn't know how to answer these questions. He doesn't think these things through a modern, sensical way. But he's also thinking, you know what, at the end of the day, I'm going to get my billions. Why should I stress too much? Gives off that vibe.
Have you ever seen, like, the first couple episodes of the new season of American Idol?
No, but I've seen, like, clips and snippets.
Where they have the people that'll eventually go on to be the finalists. Because you can clearly see, man, these people are talented. They can sing.
Mm-hmm.
Then they have the William Hungs, where they're just awful, but they waited in line for like 17 hours mm-hmm. to sing their heart out, and yep. The rest of the world is laughing at them, but they don't understand why everyone's laughing, because they think they're doing a fantastic job. That's George McCaskey.
It reminds me of Kitchen Nightmares. If you ever watch Kitchen Nightmares or Bar Rescue.
George McCaskey is the William Hung of football.
I love it. Have you the Office episode? Oh, so you're a big William Hung fan? Why does everyone keep asking me that? Who the hell is that?
But I want to just read some tweets from the Bears beat writers.
All right, let's hear them.
It's going to take me a second to go through them, but Jason Leiser, who's from the Sun-Times, he's the Bears beat writer for the Chicago Sun-Times. Any optimism you felt this morning about the Bears reset was squashed hard in this past hour.
Yep.
let's see. Let's go with Kevin Fishbane. I'm not cherry picking. I'm just picking out names I can think of off the top of my head. I still can't get, oh, sorry. He's replying to a Jason Goff tweet. So Jason Goff tweeted, number one, using grieving family and kid chastise bear. Jason Goff basically tweeted my tweet.
He did. He did.
Using a grieving family and kid to chastise Bears fans for being idiots. Two, insult a reporter columnist before a question is asked. Three, drive Bill Polian's book sales. Four, call one of the most respected players in your team's history a liar. Five, fail to instill confidence. Kevin Fishbane quoted that tweet and said, I still can't get over number one here. I'm not entirely sure in what world George McCaskey or anyone who read his opening remarks beforehand found that segue to be appropriate. And then he posted a clip of George McCaskey said, the embarrassing, awkward, and unnecessary transition. Let's see. Let's go Adam Johns. I'm going to pick some random people. I'm not cherry picking these. I'm just picking random beat writers. He's just putting actual facts here. All right, here we go. So, gifts only. Send them over. Here's mine. And then he has a pic, the gif of Michael Scott sitting in the park throwing bread to the birds. All right. Let's see. Brad Biggs. Brad Biggs just quoted tweets. He hasn't said anything disparaging. All right, give me another name here.
Of a Bears beat writer?
Yeah, somebody you want to...
Mark Podlash, didn't he ask some really good questions? He might have tweeted some things.
Yeah, he tweeted... Bears chairman George McCaskey has now fired 3 general managers and has overseen the firing of 4 head coaches. How many bites of the apple does he deserve?
Yeah. We discussed that earlier. Yeah.
Let's see. Patrick Finley. Okay, here we go. Rick Morrissey. I'm going to get busy writing a column begging Bears fans to stop supporting this nonsense. Patrick Finley quoted that saying, time to go to work.
Ooh.
Let's see. Dan Wiederer. He just quoted tweets. Tweeted quotes from the press conference.
I know Lawrence Holmes had some strong words.
Dan Wiederer. George McCaskey, by default, has become the chief overseer and evaluator of the Bears general manager. In the same press conference announcing that move, George also said, I'm just a fan. I'm not a football evaluator. Like, they're all bashing George McCaskey. Like, how oblivious are you of how bad you are at your job?
And that's the whole thing, because as I say, it's one thing to try and really put effort into something and fail and say, you know what? I wasn't good at it. I gave it my best. I had the best intentions and I failed. And look, I'm sure George has the intentions at least to somewhat try, even though he's making a lot of money. And that, you know, he's obviously had many bites at the apple and their attempts have failed. And as I said earlier in the show, I would have respected him a lot more if he came out and said, you know what? I'm not qualified to do this. We're going to hire people who are. And I'd say, okay, you were incompetent. You admitted it. I respect that. We can't all be talent evaluators in the NFL. I know I'm not. We all can't do everything. We are all human. I get that. But the fact that you continue to be incompetent and delusional and still think what you're doing is right, that is why we are pissed off. Again, it's like a lot of those kitchen nightmare bar rescue owners. You could see the world is crumbling around them in their business. Everything is failing. The quality is bad. And yet they still are in denial. This is what this is.
That's a good way to put it. George McCaskey is in denial about the only reason that this franchise is staying afloat is because everything, the NFL is the golden goose. And
you're in Chicago.
And it is, but this is a disaster. And honestly, as long as the McCaskeys own this family, it's going to be real tough to build a consistent winner. And I'm sure every once in a while, you'll have a team that's fairly successful. Oh, we have a team that made the playoffs. Okay. But you will not build a Pittsburgh Steeler con- consistently good team, a Patriots consistently good team, or any of these teams are just consistently good year in and year out until you have new ownership.
The sad thing about all of this is that our only hope is luck, that they accidentally find the right guy. Whether it's the general manager, the head coach, both, that we don't have faith that they are going to find the right guy because of their process, that our only hope is if they accidentally hire the right guy, where they say, all right, let's bring this guy in, and he happens to be the right guy. He happens to be good. That's all we can really rely on right now.
Yeah, sheer dumb luck.
Yeah.
But the thing is the problem is their evaluation process weeds out legitimate people. Because if you're a legitimate candidate, why in the world do you want to go to the Bears? Because you're going to have to deal with Ding Dong George. After your boss is, can you imagine being in your position as a general manager and head of football of a team, and you are being successful and you're being questioned about how you do your job by Ding Dong George. And Ding Dong George is your boss. How does that work?
If I listened to that press conference and I heard about the way he talked about Jeff Dickerson and Nolan Kreutz, I wouldn't go there. I think that this press conference has the potential to be incredibly damaging, because people see that. People, candidates, people who know candidates, they see it. It's in the public eye. It's out there. The reputation has been further damaged, and everyone sees it.
Yeah. Everybody watches this and goes, oof, oof. This is who owns our team. This is the head. This is who's going to pick our coach and our general manager. And the fact that they would even consider hiring a coach before they hired a general manager is just further proof that Ding Dong George is an idiot. Because if you admit you don't know what you're doing, wouldn't you be like, you know what? Let's make as few of decisions as possible. Like, honestly, if he has such faith in Bill Polian because he wrote a book, why then wouldn't he just be like, let me hire Bill Polian to be the president of football operations and let him just choose the general manager?
Yeah, somebody made that point too. I can't remember if it was Spiegel or Parkins or Holmes. I don't remember, but I think somebody made that same point. And that wouldn't be my first choice as president of football operations in 2022. Well, but yes, I agree with what you're saying.
Yeah, mine either. But you know what? If you're Ding Dong George and you admit you're just a fan that was born into the lottery with a winning lottery ticket of owning the Bears, is go, you know what? Either I'm going to learn or I'm going to make as few decisions as possible. And that one decision is, let me choose the person who heads all of that, everything football related, and let them build it from there. Because here's the thing, is the Bears are woefully lacking in analytics. And listen, the analytics world in the NFL is, as a whole, is woefully behind what it is in baseball.
Yeah, baseball is light years ahead of anybody.
Baseball, and I read a ESPN poll of, this is a poll of front office executives in the NFL. And they feel that, and you know, most people thought that the NFL was 5 to 15 years behind baseball in analytics, which is an eternity in sports. That's a long time being behind them. But then they ranked teams that they felt were the most analytical in what they did. And it was, a lot of them were teams that were, you know, building for success. Now it's the Browns shot up the list right when they became good. The Colts, the Eagles, the Bears nowhere on that list of the top teams any year because they have minimal analytics. They don't have a huge analytics department.
But they have grit and passion, that's good for us.
Yeah, I don't care about grit and passion. Is if you can have grit and passion, but I want numbers and things to back that up.
Good players.
I want a more robust scouting department. I want a more robust analytics department. I want a more robust everything. Here's the thing. In the NFL, everybody is on the same playing field as far as how much money you're allowed to spend on players, correct?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It is a hard cap. Can't go over it. Sure, mm-hmm. You can kick some of that money down the road, but that just hinders you in other years. Everybody has a cap.
Right.
But outside that cap, that's where you can differentiate yourself. You have an amazing scouting department. Your scouts are better. Your college scouts are better. Okay, well, you're going to draft better then. You have the best strength and conditioning and medical program. Okay, you are going to have a better on-field performance because your players are in better shape. They're stronger. They're faster. They're healthier. Okay, you have the best coaching staff with the most coaches. Okay. That's money is no object there. There's no cap on coaches. Having the best analytics department, that is how you differentiate yourself. And the Bears are woefully behind because they want to keep it old school. I love old school for a lot of things, but you know what? If we're trying to build a winning program, is stop trying to chase a trend and of, oh, well, we hired Matt Nagy because he was the hot name in offensive gurus to build a quarterback because that's what the Rams did and it worked. Is build from the ground up, build that analytics department, build a whole winning organization with winning structure and a good marketing team to, you know, good fan relations, everything. It all works symbiotically to make a better team. And the problem is it costs money. And this is the McCaskey family are rich, but they are not like crazy liquid rich like some of the other owners in this league. This is their sole source of income, period.
Which is why, as many angles as we try to give ourselves hope, I don't think they're going to sell. Unless they make this Arlington Heights things work and they build the value and they sell off that. But for the time being, they're not going to sell. This is what we're stuck with.
And listen, Virginia McCaskey just turned 99 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Just a couple of days since our last episode, she turned 99 years old.
She's trying to be Betty White.
Yes. She's like, Betty White, I'm coming for you. Like how much longer do we honestly and realistically think she'll be on this earth? George McCaskey even acknowledged in the press conference, you know, that without so many words, but yeah, he's like, his mom is very, very disappointed. And but he basically said that, you know, they're trying to win so she can see it. And so I'm really curious of what her will states. Does she just gift the team to her children? I don't know. Because George McCaskey we had Muggs, another kid, Muggs, who died.
I thought that was Hallis's kid.
I'm sorry. The George Hallis, when he passed down the team, does Virginia own 100% of it, or are there other family members that have a portion of the team?
Well, what my understanding was is that Muggs was supposed to get it and then he died. So it went to Virginia. That was my understanding.
So she got all of it.
I believe so. Well, wasn't it her and her husband?
Yes.
Because her husband, from what I remember, ran the team for quite a while.
Let's see. So, Muggs had two kids. I wonder if they have any sort of stake in it at all.
I don't know.
Yeah, so Virginia McCaskey's husband died a long time ago, almost 20 years ago.
Right.
And so now it is her and her stupid kids. Well, Michael's dead. And then the rest of them are all boards of directors. And then they all have kids. So
right.
Is...
Right, so if she dies, does this go straight all the Ding Dong George?
Well, nothing's go to Michael. So I'm guessing all the siblings will get something. And then do the grandkids get it? Or does it only go to, she only going to give it to Ding Dong George and then let him because she knows, like, I don't know. I don't know how this works, because if she equally gifts portions of the team to people, what's to stop them from just selling? And then somebody coming in and eventually just buying stake in the Bears to have say.
And that's why I have thought, like, you know, once she goes, what's going to change? And are they buying the Arlington Heights or planning to buy the Arlington Heights land with the idea that this is going to be the plan? Because, you know, I don't want to sound morbid, but they know she doesn't have much time left on this earth. She's basically a century old. So I don't know what that's a really good question. It really is. And if this whole plan is to kind of go down that approach, is it fair to say that George just doesn't really want to invest the time and the money to improve the structure because he knows that eventually they're going to sell? I don't know.
Yeah, it's, I don't know enough about how she, her will is structured. And that's, you know, I've heard rumblings where the grandkids are interested in selling. And why wouldn't you be? Listen, I love the Bears, but if I was resource strapped or there was too many cooks in the kitchen where, you know, I have to answer to, once Virginia dies and, you know, how many more years is George going to be working at this? Because I mean, he's a senior citizen. Was he 66 years old?
Yeah. He's somewhere in his 60s.
I mean, how much longer is he going to do that? And then eventually, you know, are you just going to keep passing it to people that are related to you because somehow they're going to make that work? Like, at what point you're just like, you know what? I would rather just cash out. This is a franchise that's worth like $5 billion. Cash out.
Yeah. Cash out. That's what I do.
I mean, listen, for that amount of money, you know, how many tickets I could buy just to go visit, or, you know, how big of a TV I could watch them on Sundays. It's just not worth it at a certain point.
Watch. It's going to get passed down to the grandkids and they're going to sell and they're going to be working on the transaction. And then you hear Ding Dong George outside, like trying to pound to get in to try to get them to stop. And then they're going to have to restrain Ding Dong George as they hand over the final transactions.
And again, not being morbid, Virginia is 99 years old. Do you know how many people in the United States, let's put it this way, for every 10,000 people in the United States, less than two of them make it to the age of 100.
Yeah.
So it's less than two out of 10,000.
Yeah.
So the odds are real against her living to be 100. She's not going to be with us that much longer.
And that's what's kind of sad about this whole thing, is that here's Ding Dong George not willing to admit that their ways are outdated, flawed, and not effective whatsoever. And yet, Virginia McCaskey's last memories most likely are going to be of this debacle. It's kind of sad. Wouldn't you want to do everything you could to give your mother one last shot at a winner? That including saying, hey, we're not good at building a football team. Let's bring in people who are and change our ways. Wouldn't that be the logical thing to do?
Yeah, I just don't understand the thought process. And, you know, that board of directors meeting with a bunch of mid-60s and older people, like, is it just them falling asleep watching reruns of Matlock and somebody's waking up going, where's my butterscotch pudding snack? Like, what it goes on there? Like, it just, there's no youth. There's no understanding of what's going on today. And it's amplified by the fact that they're like, I'm going to ask a guy that's 80 years old for his expert opinion on how to fix our franchise. And I'm going to ask other old people how to fix our franchise. You need a firewall from yourself and find that your Arturis Karnisovas, find that guy. Find that guy and then just turn him loose. Whatever it is you need, blank check. You hire your general manager. You hire your scouts. You hire your coach. Because you know what? If the Reinsdorf family had tried to go out and hire a coach before they hired their front office staff, one, they would have got it wrong. And two, they wouldn't have got Billy Donovan.
Yep.
If you want top people that are going to perform, you need to have something there where they want to come. And Michael Lombardi said it, I believe, that how are you going to, before we knew that they were firing Ryan Pace, how are you going to attract a top-notch coach to come here if Ryan Pace is your general manager? How are you going to do that?
And you're kind of in an unfortunate situation now. You're going to try to attract someone to come here after this debacle? I'm not saying people wouldn't want to come to Chicago, but I'd be weary after what this happened, seeing how this franchise functions. I mean, honestly, and you know, to your point about AK, and you go back to the point I made about Theo and the Cubs, you saw several things there. Is neither Michael Reinsdorf or Tom Ricketts, from what we understand, really had any input on who was brought in. Yes, Tom Ricketts set the budget. And yes, he said, you know what? We're going to be balling on a budget the last few years where they're not spending much money. But Ricketts wasn't involved in the guys they brought in or the trades they made. They brought those guys in because of what Epstein and Hoyer and their guys did. Michael Reinsdorf, he's letting AK run the show here. I mean, there's big differences. Really, an owner of any sports franchise should just employ the people to do their jobs without any say. The coaches, the players, the staff that runs the team, whether it's scouts, assistant coaches, whatever, that should all be done by the president of operations. And one of the big points of having multiple tiers, of having a general manager and a president of operations, is to have guys bounce off each other. And not really in a conflicting way, but for somebody to say, you know, here's the process the way you see it. Here's the process the way I see it. You know, maybe we should look at this guy instead of this guy. Maybe we should trade for this guy instead of this guy, where, you know, Ryan Pace, there was nobody to tell him, don't trade all these assets away. Don't trade up one spot for Mitchell Trubisky. Don't trade this guy. Don't draft this guy. There was no There was nobody to bounce off with. It was just him and him alone. You get what I'm saying, right?
Yep, absolutely. You need that structure in place. And honestly, I like the philosophy that AK brought to the Bulls. He said, I want a general manager that's good at things that I'm not good at. So we have different points of view on things and we come to conclusions on things, but this person is good at this. I'm good at this. So bring in a president of football operations, the football czar that, can assist in the hiring of a coach. They would hire the GM. They would be the one that builds the infrastructure around, and then bring in a general manager who is good with, salary cap stuff, or good at pro scouting and whatever it is you're not good at, because here's the avenues you need to be good at. You need to be good at pro scouting. So that way, when you sign free agents, you are signing the right free agents and not overpaying for guys or getting guys that are going to be stink. And you need college scouts because you want to hit on as many of your draft picks as possible. You need a capologist because you can't just spend all the money in the world. You need to work within the frame of a cap, and not only just for that year, because it's not that hard to figure it out for 1 year, but in order to look down the road. And Ryan Pace could always figure out the cap that year, but he always neglected to look down the road of how his actions today would impact him 5 years
right.
from now.
Right.
And
right.
That's when you have a good capologist. All right. They're looking at that. Okay. We could do this right now, but is it worth us doing this, having this consequence later? You need analytics. Build that analytics department. And you know what? You don't need a general manager that's in analytics. Is hire an analytics department. And the president of football operations should be able to build this structure, this machine that, coaches come and coaches go, and that doesn't change. You can withstand your general manager retiring or being fired because you're like, listen, we've got this structure in place. Your offensive coordinator is success. You're successful. Your offensive coordinator ends up getting a head coaching job. Okay. We've got the structure in place to evaluate with our head coach on who would be a good offensive coordinator to replace them. And that's what happened. And now it's what we had with Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy is a case where everybody doing their job was in over their heads.
Right.
And that's a big thing for me is when you build a coaching staff, you don't want to build it where everybody is moving up a level, where your offensive coordinator prior to that was, a quality coach or a position coach. Because, all right, you have one guy like that, that's fine. But if you're all like that, there's too much inexperience and there's too many people that are learning their job at the same time to be successful. That happened under Trestman. Happened under Matt Nagy. And with Matt Nagy, it was a new whammy because you had Ryan Pace stepped in to a new role and lacked the experience to be able to do it. Matt Nagy stepped into a new role, much higher than he should be. All of his staff, except for Vic Fangio. And the thing is the most successful year they had was because of Vic Fangio. And Vic Fangio, all of his staff were in those roles for a long time. Everybody is an expert at their role. And that was what kept them afloat. And I want a, you know, president of football operations that's been a general manager before. And has, you know what? I've seen where I failed, or I've seen where I've succeeded, and I'm going to build this the right way. I want to bring in a general manager to accentuate my skills and, you know, complement my skills.
And I know the places to look to find the people that can strengthen my biggest weaknesses.
And listen, and now that we're kind of seeing this, as I don't trust George McCaskey with this, I want people that have some sort of experience. I don't want to, I really like Byron Leftwich. I think he's going to be good, but I don't think the Bears have a structure in place to allow him to be successful.
I kind of agree. And Sean, you know what? I'm going to say this too. There were a lot of things to like about Byron Leftwich. And I kind of had this feeling after a while, like, you know, we keep talking up Byron Leftwich. It almost makes you want to talk yourself out of it because it seems too good to be true. Do you know what I mean by that? Like that we were kind of that we're starting to create false expectations, especially with the way this team is run.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because
yeah,
look,
absolutely.
Matt Nagy made sense at the time.
And I think Byron Leftwich is in a much better situation than Matt Nagy. I think because he's been tenured more, and he's had, you know, he's worked with Tom Brady now and been successful, but he was successful with Jameis Winston as well. He made Jameis Winston look pretty darn good. Mm-hmm. And now he's working with Tom Brady, and that's just gotta be, you know, that's gotta be an education in itself. And Bruce Arians is just kind of like, I trust this guy. Matt Nagy didn't have that same rapport with Andy Reid. For the most part, Andy Reid called the plays. It was Andy Reid's offense. This is Bruce Arians goes, no, Byron Leftwich is my offensive coordinator. And he relies on him to game plan and to call plays. And I think he's going to be successful if he finds a situation where he's not handcuffed by the organization. And I feel the Bears would handcuff him. I think the Bears' best chance of being successful is finding people that are experienced. And I'm, while this is, he's not my preferred candidate, I think the Bears need a sure thing. And I am
going
to go.
Are you going with this where I think you're going?
Jim Harbaugh.
Yes. Sean, over the last few days, I've started to talk myself more into him. Honestly,
I think he brings Vic Fangio with him.
Uh-huh.
And they've all have the experience. Is everybody that's going to be brought in, I'm sure the offensive coordinator probably, I'm going to guess, if I had to guess right now, that if Jim Harbaugh comes back to the NFL, his offensive coordinator is going to be Pep Hamilton. And yeah. Pep, this would be a step up for Pep, but I know I just railed against stepping up, but I think stepping up is fine if you have other people to lean on that are not also in that same boat. Jim Harbaugh has been an NFL head coach, a very successful one, gone to the Super Bowl. He's been coaching for a long time. He's played in this league. This is not too big for him. We know Vic Fangio can handle being a defensive coordinator. He's one of the best in the business, and the staff that he's going to bring with him, they're going to be those positions that they're going to take are going to be positions that they've done. Everybody, it will be a well-oiled machine, that Vic Fangio, and it won't even be an adjustment for the most part on the players involved, because they're going to know him. And if so, Pep Hamilton comes in and is the offensive coordinator, I think that would be fine, because you would have the rest of the silos be, you know, very established already.
Sean, I completely agree. Honestly, how many shows have we spent saying there's no chance and I wouldn't be that into it? My opinions on that has changed, and part of that is because of the circumstances. I said today that right now, after that press conference, after that all happened, I said, you know what? If this is the way things are going to be run, then I feel like Jim Harbaugh is best case scenario. Obviously, even better would be Sean Payton, but I don't see that happening at all. Where at least with Jim Harbaugh, there is a window of opportunity that could be there for Jim Harbaugh. I don't think it's there with Sean Payton, but I think if there is the opening possibility to get a Jim Harbaugh, then that's probably your best case scenario. Because look, you know what? You got to give it to him. You look at his overall NFL career as a head coach, it's pretty good. He's been to a Super Bowl, winning record. And not like Matt Nagy, just barely over 500. I mean a winning record. Likes working with young quarterbacks. You mentioned Vic Fangio. And listen, he is one of those guys that has connections all around the game. Jim Harbaugh is no unknown schlub. Everybody in the game knows Jim Harbaugh.
And Jim Harbaugh's downfall with the 49ers was because he feuded with Trent Baalke, the general manager.
Yeah.
And that was the downfall of Jim Harbaugh. And to be honest with you, Trent Baalke then ended up failing, getting canned. And I think he's the failure. But you know, I think that is a strong possibility. Another one I like, Brian Flores, who was just fired by the Dolphins this morning for reasons.
Yeah. I wouldn't mind him.
As much as I don't like the Belichick tree of coaches, the ones that have been successful, I think really took the Belichick message and figured it out. Is Mike Vrabel has done a great job. And Brian Flores has done a great job. And I think Tua is a mid-level quarterback in the NFL. And he's built despite that. And I don't understand why he was fired. But I like that. And be honest, I would not hate Josh McDaniels. I'm nervous, but I think if the way he's built that offense to fit their rookie quarterback is pretty awesome. And
as an OC, I would be much more on board with that. As a head coach, a little weary.
I feel that. I definitely feel that, especially, you know, he crashed and burned the first time. And then the second time he got cold feet.
The whole thing with the Colts really does kind of bother me. I'm not going to lie. That does still reign in the back of my mind, but you know what? All three of those guys, or however many you mentioned, Flores, you mentioned Harbaugh, you mentioned McDaniels. I take all of them over Leslie Frazier. No disrespect to Leslie Frazier. I know he's part of the 85 Bears. He's more of a defensive guy, right? I mean,
a defensive coordinator. Yep.
Yeah. DC. He was with the Bills?
Yeah. He's with the Bills.
Yeah. I mean, as a coordinator, I'm sure he does an adequate job, but we saw him in Minnesota and it just didn't work. It didn't work. I respect him as a former player, as a coordinator, but I just do not think he's the right guy to be your head coach.
I'm nervous about Eric Bieniemy. And I think he's been very successful. I think most of that is probably due to the players that they have and Andy Reid more so than Eric Bieniemy. And I feel like you can't replace your head coach with his replacement on his last team, his last position.
Right. Yeah. No, that's fair. That's fair. I know you mentioned Chris Tabor before, and that's another one where, in my opinion, Chris Tabor would be very eh. I wouldn't say it's a horrible hire. I wouldn't say it's a good or great hire. It would feel very, I don't know if the word interim coachy is the right expression, but it feels like he would just be a guy. Like he would just be a guy. Maybe I'm wrong on that, but
I think I can see where that the perception of him being a guy would come into play, but he's a really fantastic coach. He's really well-respected, and we've had success with people that were special teams coaches that have gone on to be very successful.
And I'll trust your judgment on that. You know more about Chris Tabor than I do. So I will trust your judgment on that.
And you know, Bill Belichick has done special teams coordinating, but yes, probably the most successful that was strict. I mean, Bill Belichick was mostly known as a defensive coordinator because he transitioned there, but is John Harbaugh. He's done very well for himself.
Mm-hmm. He's got a ring.
Mm-hmm. But another name that I'm going to throw out there, Doug Peterson.
You know, if you would have asked me a month ago, I would have said, hell no, hell no. If you ask me now, I'm still not crazy about it, but maybe a tad more willing. I know other people feel differently. I know that there are other people out there who feel maybe a bit higher on Doug Peterson. I know he's won a Super Bowl. I know he's brought his team to multiple playoff appearances. Hell, he's won more playoff games in 2 years than the Bears have won over the past 20 plus. I remember how it ended in Philly, and it was really, really ugly. And maybe it's too soon for me. And maybe I'm thinking too much about that, but I'm a bit more reserved on Doug Peterson. But you know, maybe it wouldn't be as bad of a choice than I think.
I think, I don't know all the intricacies, and I could probably reach out to. I have a lot of Eagle fan friends, but I think, I think a big part of that was there was some clashes. It was the quarterback situation.
I don't think Wentz did them any favors.
Yeah. Wentz. And then you brought in a rookie, but I think he clashed with ownership ownership was trying to dictate position coaches, and he wanted to hire his own position coaches. And,
things just kind of fell apart.
And I think that was a big part of it, because the guy they brought in after him, Chip Kelly, was a complete disaster.
Yeah, yeah.
But we've seen Doug Peterson. He's clearly fearless. We saw him in the Super Bowl. He took a backup quarterback and rode him to a Super Bowl victory over Tom Brady.
He did. You got to give him a lot of credit for that.
That's not a fluke. You don't fluke ride Nick Foles to a Super Bowl victory. That's you put those plays in, you build that. He is an Andy Reid disciple, which is a little nerve-wracking. But I think a lot of things that, right now, we're just throwing names out there. A lot of this is going to come in the interview process. When you talk to these guys, hey, what's your plan based on the team we have right now? What's your plan? How are you going to develop Justin Fields? How are you going to work with the fact that we have two wide receivers? We've got Daz Newsome and Darnell Mooney. That's all we have. Like, how are you going to make that work? How are you going to fix our offensive line?
We've contacted Mushin Muhammad. He's going to come out of retirement.
Oh my God. We're going to switch the best kick returner in football and make him a wide receiver so we could justify paying him. But you ask them, like, how do you plan to do this? Who would be your coordinators? Who would be your preferred offense and defensive coordinator to work with you? Like, these are all things. And that sort of gauges, because here's the thing is, when people get fired from a job, one of two things happens. They either shrivel up and die, go away, or they self-reflect and they go, all right, where did I fail? How do I fix that? And then they work on it. You know, Marv Levy was fired and then came back to take the same team to four consecutive Super Bowls. And, you know, people will beat up on the Bills because they didn't win any of them. But that takes a special team to go to four straight
Super Bowls. That's insanely hard to do. Yeah. That is insanely hard to do.
That team was a really good team. And Marv Levy was a good coach. Bill Belichick failed with the Browns, figured out what he did wrong, and improved when he went to New England. Like, this happens. So you can't be afraid of coaches that were fired. Is the thing about Jim Harbaugh, he was fired. I think a lot of it was political.
I think so too. But I think so too.
That guy just wakes up in the morning and he is ready to attack everything.
And I feel like if he was coaching the Bears, he would kind of, I don't want, for better or for worse, kind of be the one in, wouldn't you think he'd kind of be the one in charge? Like, not actually be the GM, but don't you think that he would definitely have input on what happens?
I think you'd have to. And I think that's in regardless of whether or not you, sometimes you'll hear that the head coach has the job of player personnel too. I think you don't, if you have the proper working relationship with the general manager and the head coach, you don't need that. That it's a, you know, the general manager, he's going to do what ultimately he thinks is right. But if you tell him, listen, you know, the wide receiver depth we have, I don't think it's going to work. I don't think I'm going to be able to do that. Can you get me somebody else? I would prefer somebody, that's a Z receiver. I think that's what we need, a Z receiver. Can you go out and get me one? And they're like, okay, here's what we can do with what's available, what's in our budget. And I think that that's how those things work. You know, ultimately the general manager is going to have to do what he thinks is right because he's the boss of the head coach, but you know, there should be a good working relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's crucial. You got to be on the same page. You got to have the right philosophy. You know, you got to, you know, if you're having clashing philosophies, that's obviously going to end a disaster. But, you know, I feel like if you know you're working with a guy with Jim Harbaugh, then you're going to work on making that philosophy gel together. And I feel like having a coach that knows what he wants, there's something to that. I know college is different than, you know, the NFL, but I mean, we're trusting George McCaskey and Ted Phillips to bring in a GM and a coach.
Yeah. And here's the thing is I don't want the kumbaya bullshit that we had with Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy holding hands and picking flowers in the meadow and professing their love for each other. I don't want that. I think I'm fine if behind closed doors, people are yelling at each other and disagreeing and having, as long as it's stays manageable, like, all right, you know what? Like, I don't want there to be fistfights in the executive offices, but disagreement, absolutely, because that's how you build better. If you, everybody's a yes man, you, that's how you get to failure.
Sean there has wants to be Dallas to some, Hall to turn into Thunderdome.
I want to be Diana Ross. And, but here's the thing is, I don't want Thunderdome, but I don't want Kumbaya either.
No, I get that.
There's gotta be some sort of counter counter voice, you know, in the draft room. No, I don't want that guy. That guy is going to be a bust. We can't draft that guy.
We can't draft Kevin White, who's had how many injuries now?
Yeah. When you look at it, be like, okay, I get this guy has the skill level, but look at that injury history. And he's not a big guy. He's going to get smashed in the NFL. All right. No, we can't do that. And then the guy who fought hardest for him go, you know what? I see the points you're making and I'm going to soften on my love for him. Like, that's what I want is everybody there, every decision to have somebody be a devil's advocate against it, you know? All right. Well, why that guy? What about this guy? You know, just to add full perspective on things. That's where you're going to get is a better decision when people have weighed all the pros and cons and bickered about it and you know, really, really fought hard on this decision and come to that final conclusion. I think you're going to have a better result than, you know what? I just love Mitch Trubisky. Yeah, that's a good pick, man. Go for it. I'm just, you know, he's a guy I really want. I'm going to trade the farm to move up one pick to get him. Yeah, man, you do you. Be you. Like, I don't want that. Like, I want there to be counterpoints to everything.
Yeah, well, while I do have respect that Pace and Nagy wanted to create a certain type of culture, like, I really do respect that they wanted to do that. You gotta kind of put things in perspective too. Like, you can't just say, you know what, here, we're not gonna call anyone out when something goes wrong or bring any counterpoints. That's a little too much. I mean, this is a competitive game where you're competing all the time. And in order to be competitive, you gotta kind of, you know, be willing to not always be so kumbaya all the time. I totally get what you're saying.
Players that think it's about them when it's about the team. And we cannot make decisions that cost the team. And then come off the sideline and it's nonchalant. No. You know what? This is how I believe, okay? I'm from the old school. I believe this. I would rather play with 10 people and just get penalized all the way until we got to do something else, rather than play with 11 when I know that right now that person is not sold out to be a part of this team. It is more about them than it is about the team. Cannot play with them. Cannot win with them. Cannot coach with them. Can't do it.
I just needed to throw that in there. I need a little of that sometimes. Can't do it. Can't win. Allen Robinson, can't do it. Can't win with him. Can't play with him. Can't do it.
Yeah, no, I'm very glad you played that soundbite. That is an all-time great interview, by the way.
And, you know, and this new general manager is going to have a lot of decisions. A lot of decisions. What do you do with the Eddie Jackson contract? What do you do about James Daniels? What do you do about Eddie Goldman? What do you do? Obviously, I guess you could franchise tag Allen Robinson again, but are you willing to do that? How are you going to bring a number one receiver into this building?
How are you going to fix that secondary that needs a complete overhaul?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the Darnell Mooney had a nice season. Hit 1,000 yards.
The fact that he was on 1,000 yards totally caught up to me. I didn't think he was really near that.
I mean, 17 games too. But he had a nice season. He had a very nice season, but on a team that's going to be a Super Bowl contender, he's not a number one. And I want a number one in there. And so how we've seen how hard it is to bring in a number one receiver. I mean, think of some of the days pre Allen Robinson. And you think about the wide receiver core and you're like, oof, how do you win with that? Like, so how are you going to bring a real number one onto this roster? How are you going to do it?
Thanks to Ryan Pace, you don't have as much draft capital as you would like.
It's
and,
true.
You know, and here's the thing. Mully made this point on 670 The Score. Yeah, free agency could bring you some guys. But remember this. When you bring in free agents, you are going to basically be overpaying for all of them. It's a lot of money to commit to bring in a free agent.
Yep. Yep, it's true. And here, before you brought in Allen Robinson, your wide receiver core the year before was Josh Bellamy, Tanner Gentry, Dontrell Inman, Trey McBride, Deontay Thompson, Marcus Wheaton, Kevin White, and Kendall Wright. That was your wide receiver core the year before they brought in Allen Robinson.
Yeah, classic.
That
when Dontrell Inman was literally your best player on that core.
Dontrell Inman was, yeah, arguably the best wide receiver that you had on that roster. And that guy, and I don't think that guy ever had a 1,000-yard receiving year. Let's see.
Did he play with the Chargers before the Bears?
Yes. He had 810 yards in 2016. But here's his career. 2014, 158 yards receiving. 2015, 486 yards. 2016, 810. In 2017, 343 yards. 2018, 303. 2019, 181. And 2020, 163 yards. That guy, his career is over, and he didn't even finish with 2,500 yards receiving. That was our best wide receiver.
Yeah, good times.
So how are you going to fix that? There's a lot of things. And then obviously getting the coach right. This is a monumental decision right now. You can't screw this up again because we're dangerously close to becoming the Detroit Lions.
And you know what? Right now, I think Lions fans are feeling better about their team than Bears fans feel about theirs.
Honestly, the Lions beat the Packers. They finished the season beating the Packers. And
they had three wins, but they were competitive in a lot of those games with that roster.
That roster, Jared Goff is your quarterback. Your receivers are bogus. Your defense is a joke. The fact that you stayed fired up and playing hard and you beat the Packers and don't think it was a fluke is because Aaron Rodgers played the first half of that game. David Bakhtiari played in that game. You had players playing in that game. Devontae Adams played in that game. So the Lions just played a really damn good football game.
So, and there have been multiple losses for the Lions. They easily could have won. I mean, Justin Tucker making an unreal field goal that's never been done before.
And it shouldn't have even been a field goal because there should have been a penalty.
Delay a game, yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm.
You know, so... This year, the Lions competed. They weren't very good.
They weren't helpless like under Matt Patricia.
It's so. Let's see. I'm looking at their schedule now, and let's see preseason. So the first game of the season, they almost beat the Lions. That was a shootout. All right. They got smoked by the Packers the first game. that then the Lions game or the Ravens game that they should have won. Got beat by the Bears. Barely lost to they lost by two to the Vikings. Smoked by the Bengals, smoked by the Rams, smoked by the Eagles. Tied the Steelers. That was a bad game. That was a real bad game.
Yeah, it was awful.
I think they had a backup quarterback in that game. They barely lost to the Browns. They lost by a field goal, lost by two to the Bears, they beat the Vikings, smoked by the Broncos. I don't know how that happened. Beat the Cardinals. That was a good game.
Their best game of the year.
Yep. And then they they come back and lose to the Falcons. I don't know how they did that one. Smoked by the Seahawks. And then they beat the Packers. So they've been competitive. I mean, they easily could have had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. They could have had 6 more wins with a couple of extra points. And that puts them better than the Bears.
They're one of the best 3-win teams we've seen.
And they're going to get better. And if they figure out the quarterback situation, they could be better in a hurry.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They want to play for Dan Campbell.
Yep. That's the thing is it doesn't, I've changed my tune. It's not about finding a coordinator that's good at the problem that you need fixed to fix that problem. It's about finding a person that is going to be the leader of a team. That's why Brian Flores was successful. That's why Mike Vrabel's a defensive guy, but you know what? That Titans offense, that they can put up some points.
And if they get Derrick Henry back for the playoffs, look out.
Yeah. So, you know, like, can you even tell me what side of the ball that Jim Harbaugh focuses on? Like, no, because he's a head coach. There's guys that are just head coaches. And that's my fear about going, well, Brian Daboll helped develop Josh Allen. So let him do that with Justin Fields. I don't want that. You're identifying a problem and finding a solution to that problem rather than finding a football coach.
Right.
And I'm just terrified that this is not going to go well for the Bears. Because if they've hired a coach before they hire the general manager, I might denounce my fandom because it'll just be a disaster. Is hire your general manager and then step the fuck off. Walk away, be like, you know what? We picked the guy that we believe in, let him do his job.
Yeah, that's what should happen, but do we have faith that they're going to do the right thing? Because I sure as hell don't.
Because now we're hearing that Ryan Pace, when he got hired, wanted a different head coach. He wanted Dan Quinn. And they said, no, here's John Fox.
Yeah.
And this is when you knew that Ryan Pace was going to be a failure because he said, okay.
That's fine. We collaborated. It's okay.
Is honestly, I'm the general manager. You hire Sean as your general manager. And I go, I want Jim Harbaugh. And they went, Jim Harbaugh is a little expensive. How about Brian Daboll? And I'm going to go, how about the fuck not? I want my guy. Step off. Back off now. Once I sign that contract, go ahead and fire me because you're paying me the whole contract. You're not going to do it. I want my guy. Leave me alone.
Right.
If I fail, judge me on that. That's on me. But you better not handcuff me to do my job. Let me do my job. If I stink at it, then you can fire me. But You can't hinder me from doing my job and then judge me on that job that you hindered me doing.
See, you keep talking logic and we're talking about the Bears here, and clearly after today, that doesn't exist with them.
True.
It drives me nuts how they continue to be so out of touch.
It's funny. As a point of humor, somebody tweeted, I could just hear Ted Phillips breathing on that call the whole time. It sounded like he was eating cold cuts. Old sweaty Teddy. But I just today, like, I felt it was going to be so good when Schefter finally tweeted that Ryan Pace was gone and that we were going to have a press conference at 1 o'clock with just George McCaskey.
Yep. Yep.
And I went, okay, maybe everything that people told him, he actually heard.
He heard and he listened.
He's like, I listened to this. I heard this. I felt it. I'm doing what I was instructed to do. And I'm like, oh man. And then that train just went off the tracks. I just.
So quickly. I mean, again, like this, the opening statements. Ted Phillips is on the call. He'll be taking questions. Every Bears fan collectively went, oh boy.
It just derailed everything. Derailed everything. So now you have, if you're George McCaskey, you have all the beat writers, all of the fans just ready to rip your throat out. Is that where you want to be?
Well, that's what I can't help think too. Like, if you're George McCaskey and you are consistently hearing backlash from the fan base, from the beat writers, I mean, those beat writers, I applaud the hell out of them. They did not hold back today.
Yeah,
I am so proud of them.
Last year, a lot of them, you know, put on some kid gloves. And they were, you know, didn't fully go at him. This year, they were just like, no. Boom, going after you. Speaking of going after, you wrote a letter to George McCaskey. Are you willing to read that right now?
You know, I'm gonna read it, but I'm gonna warn you, it's gonna sound way too diplomatic. And keep in mind, I wrote this last week. This was before this press conference. This was before the Olin Krutz story came out. This was a very, very diplomatic letter that I tried to be as classy as possible. And you might hear this now and cringe a little bit, and I'll probably cringe to myself. But my whole thought was, if I express my feelings in a way that doesn't berate anybody, it might get the message across clearer. But obviously, my feelings have changed, but without further ado, this was my letter to Ding Dong George. Dear George McCaskey, my name is Alex. I am 27 years old and have been a diehard Chicago Bears fan my entire life. The Bears are a big part of my family and have always meant a lot to us. My grandpa was a season ticket holder in the late 1950s and early 1960s. One of our prized family possessions is a home video he took from his seats at Wrigley Field during the 1963 NFL title game. We still have a lot of old ticket stubs and memorabilia he's collected over the years. I could go on about how much the team means to my family and I, but I think you get the picture. I do not want to make this letter a personal attack against you, your family, or any of your employees. I believe you have good intentions with how you operate. With that, given the vibe that you've given respect to your employees and treat them right, I will respect that. We are all humans at the end of the day. With all that said, I must express my deep concerns about the franchise and how it stands. In the 27 years I've been alive, I've seen our team have one legit shot at a Super Bowl title. I can count the number of times on one hand we have defeated the Green Bay Packers over the past 10 plus years. I have seen people around me abandon their Chicago football roots and to follow other sports teams instead. The number of Packers gear I see wandering around the Chicagoland area these days is too dang high for a city that is supposed to embrace the Bears. It might be difficult for you to see from your perspective, but I see a fan base that is slowly shrinking by the day. In today's modern sports world, fans always have access to all the games thanks to streaming, services, smartphones, and television packages. It is much easier now for people to look elsewhere than their hometown team to seek their rooting interest. And I see that happening with the Bears. The problem is that we do not have enough sustained success on the field, and fans want to watch the stars like Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, and Patrick Mahomes. I know this is a big week coming for the Bears, and decisions must be made. I do not want to go on a rant and express a lot of joy at the prospect of you dismissing the front office and your head coach. They are humans like us, but this isn't working. Part of running a business is adapting to what works and what doesn't. This is your business, and you alone have the final say how you run it. I cannot tell you how to operate, but please remember this when you evaluate your position and reflect on the lack of results that we have seen. Mr. McCaskey, I want to express one last thing. The Bears deserve to be better. The Bears have historically been one of the most important franchises in America, and now they are getting no respect because of how lackluster the results have been. Three playoff wins since 1996 is not ideal for a franchise of this caliber. Just remember these words, I still own you. Those words will stand the test of time, and our team will be consistently mocked because of that. I do not want to hear that any more than you do, and only change can make those words history and no longer reality. Until then, they will hover over Soldier Field like a dark cloud. We do not deserve that. I hope this letter gives you an idea of how a lot of people feel and why we feel the way we do. I hope you at least understand that we want change simply because we want our team to succeed on the highest level. Nothing personal against anybody. After watching the Chicago Cubs win the World Series in 2016, I realized anything was possible. We can be great again. We can beat the Green Bay Packers. We can win a Super Bowl. But the effort and the right decisions must be made to get there. Thank you for reading. Sincerely, Alex Pat.
I want to write a follow-up letter to mine. Just as George, you may want to stay off Twitter for a while.
Nah, George, you be a ding dong.
Do you think after that press conference, he ran into Sweaty Teddy's office and high-fived him and was like, nailed it? Do you think he thought that was a successful press conference?
Timmy's probably like, oh, that went well.
Like, I honest to God think he probably thought that was a successful press conference.
Probably was.
That's the sad part is, listen, I've bombed at things before. And
me too. I have at plenty of things.
I recognize it when it's happening that it is a bomb. And I don't think I watched that man, and at no point in there do I think he was like, I don't think this is going so well.
Right. He didn't take anything back. He didn't back up the truck and be like, let me re-explain or let me reword this. He didn't do any of that. He just babbled on and on and on. And that, again, I go back to this again. This is why I'm so upset about this. It's the fact that you haven't gotten results in a long time and you continue to think that your flawed ways of doing things work when they don't. If he would have tried, and it didn't work, and say, you know what? It didn't work. Let's try something new. That's completely different. We are all not able to do everything. We all fail at things. We are not perfect. I'm not perfect. I failed at plenty of things in my life. But when you see it's not working or it's not good, you make the change, you try something different, but they refuse to do that.
Accurate. So now it's the waiting game. We know that Leslie Frazier is going to be interviewed. And fine, if you're going to interview Leslie Frazier, that's fine. Interview 50 people, but yes. Leslie Frazier should not be a finalist for the job, period.
I agree. And you know, you have an opportunity. If you're going to interview a ton of people and you're going to go all out, this should be your opportunity to pick people's brains. You should keep that in mind when you're interviewing people. And I think that's how I feel about Leslie Frazier. If he's a guy you're going to interview, I don't want him to be my head coach, but at least try to pick his brain on some philosophies. I mean, that's part of the whole reason you're doing all these interviews. Just don't be so short-sighted that you have to go, oh, well, he's got to fit the
the Bear tradition that the nitty, the gritty's got to win the press conference like Mark Trestman did. That's why you've been in the situation time after time after time again.
So I think I've got this out of my system.
And, me too.
You know, we needed it. Yeah, we'll talk. Sorry we didn't talk about the game. I'll sum it up for you. They stunk. And it was a fitting way they went out.
It was just like the Nagy era. It started off good and it ended poorly.
Yeah. You were up what, 14-3 at halftime, and you only ran 9 times in the second half.
You threw a pick six on 4th and 1.
You
failed twice to convert on a 4th and 1, not running it once.
Yeah, you didn't run on 4th and 1 on 3 different occasions with David Montgomery, and he wasn't even on the field. And you took it from a shotgun. It just summed up the whole Matt Nagy era.
Balled out at first, and you didn't take advantage of touchdowns when you drove time and time again in the red zone.
Yeah, it was just everything of the Matt Nagy era. There was no second half adjustments. You got out coached again. We'll talk Bulls and Blackhawks in the next episode. This was cathartic. We needed to discuss this. Get Ding Dong George off our chest. And then now it's the waiting game. Who are they? Who are these leaders of men they're going to interview? Who are these new general managers? Who are they going to trust the organization with? And is it going to work?
Again, I feel like we have to rely on luck, that the right guy is going to fall at the right place in the right time.
I mean, honestly, you just need to luck once. You luck into the right general manager and he picks the right head coach because he does the right things. He puts the rest of it in place. So you really just got to nail that. And honestly, I think if you pick the right general manager and old ass Bill Polian and Ding Dong George try to step in, or Soup comes in and with suggestions on the head coach, you just hit them all with a folding chair and then suplex them through the off the top rope and be like, no, this is my decision. Back off, Soup. Back off, Ding Dong.
Mr. Soup, Mr. Ding Dong. With all due respect,
Bill Polian, I'll come
listen to you.
Bill Polian, I will come at you like a spider monkey. But I think that's going to do it for this episode of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. I want to thank everybody so much for listening. Please hit subscribe however you listen to podcasts, whether it's iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, Google Play, Spotify, etc. Share this podcast with your friends. It's how we grow the show. Follow us on social media at Swirsky Sports, facebook.com/SwirskySports, SwirskySports.com, or all of Alex's endeavors at alexanderjpatcreative.com. And thank you guys so much for listening. And until next time, bear down.
Break. The good Lord wants the Cubs to win.
We thank Ditka and God for all they have provided.
Cubs win! Cubs win! Cubs win!
Oh, I don't want her. You can have her. She's a Packer fan. She can't fit in my van.
And she looks like...
Remember, New Yorkers, smoking crack is not legal on planes.
Bears 31 to -7.
The Bears.
Oh, when the Bears go bearing down.